Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckless AB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
I'm Royal Oaks. Next time on Too Many Lawyers, we take on a couple of villains to sort out whether bad stuff is also illegal stuff. George Santos won a seat in Congress by lying to voters, but is that a crime? And Kanye West made it clear he hates Jews. In England, he'd go to jail for that. Here in America, did he commit a hate crime? Listen to Too Many Lawyers on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I fucking love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston accent.
Big jab there from Duffy and Brett Beer is hurt now.
Down goes Duffy out cold. Brett Beer does it again.
Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bullshit artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
All right, good to be back in your life. Sunday, July 10th, 2022. It's episode 356 of the Anik and Florian podcast, starring former three-time UFC title challenger Kenny Florian. You know, they say you're not supposed to have aspartame for more reasons than one. Like, Ken Flo hasn't had aspartame in a long time, right? I went for a run this morning. I had some Diet Coke, and it messes with your voice. So I only drink coffee and tea. Very rarely will I have a Monster Energy drink on fight night if I really need it. But we banged some aspartame this morning, Ken Flo, and we're paying the price.
I had never heard that about the voice, kid. That's crazy.
I know. Citrus and aspartame, dang, both very bad. People think, oh, yeah, hot water with lemon. No, no citrus on fight night for commentators out there. Yeah. But it is good to be back with everybody. What have you been doing? You've been shooting guns, doing all sorts of tactical training, just becoming like like a more lethal human weapon in your spare time. Is that what you've been doing? Basically.
Well, the thing is, I'm getting older, all right? So my back isn't as good as it used to be. And I just enjoy doing that stuff. Like, I get obsessed with certain things, and then when I get into it, like, I need to be doing it or thinking about it, yeah, all the time. Right. So, like, I'm trying to get better, learning a lot, and having some fun. Shout out to my guy, Scott Jelinski, the Jedi, Red Dot expert. He was an amazing coach, so learned a lot last week. Yeah,
good stuff. Speaking of your age, in terms of competitive jiu-jitsu, you got that little gym in your house, so to speak, right now with, yes, the padded walls and everything else. Those, you know, Jones in to see you back on the competitive jiu-jitsu circuit, they should not hold their breath. Is that the deal?
Yeah, so, you know, my back's been bad for a while, but there's no rhyme or reason of what sets it off. Like, I haven't been able to train more than two or three times a week in a long time, dude. Like, I don't get it. I'll do all the things I'm supposed to be doing, and my back just, like, turns to garbage. So, got to figure something out. I'm thinking about maybe some stem cell or something for my back,
yeah,
and my hip and my knee and probably, right, something else. But anyways, yeah, I'm deteriorating, John. That's the short story. Yeah.
No, Buffer said to me a couple weeks ago, he's like, hey, man, you know, every decision you make right now, you're going to pay for in 20 years. And I'm like, whoa, bro, I'm just trying to go for a fucking walk in Singapore before the pay-per-view, you know? But obviously Buff takes great care of himself. You know, I think for a lot of us, we work hard, we play hard, right? Guess I should just leave it at that.
Bruce's still doing splits, John, I think.
Oh, all sorts of stuff. I mean, you should, yeah, see his warm-up before he announces.
You know? He's a beast.
Just stay He's out of his beast. Range, you know? His distance management isn't so good with his kicks and his pre-fight.
Dude, he'll slap you in the face with his foot. There's no question about it.
There is no doubt about, yeah, it. If I was, yeah, an athlete and I didn't want to give him a fist bump, I'd probably just give him like the token fist bump. Get this lunatic out of my face. He's screaming. Veins coming out of his neck. Anik and Florian podcast today brought to you in part by UFC Fight Pass. See the best UFC Fight Pass has to offer on the Fight Pass 24/7 stream, offering a constant channel of historic fight action all day, all night. Tune in, sit back, and enjoy a network created by fans for fans. Step into our world, UFCFightPass.com. All right, headlines today will focus on UFC Fight Night, which just evaporated a few hours ago. It was UFC Fight Night, Dos Anjos versus Fazeev at the old UFC Apex. Always interesting when you go from bells and whistles at T-Mobile Arena, 30-foot octagon, back to the 25-footer at the UFC Apex. Really good main event, really good performance for Rafael Fiziev. Gets the knockout of Rafael Dos Anjos at 18 seconds of round five. It came after RDA had a particularly strong round four, after Fiziev really had controlled most of the action up until that point. Plus 150 for those who had Fiziev by knockout, TKO, or DQ. Your thoughts on the lightweight main event just a few short hours ago, my man?
We know a lot more about Rafael Fiziev than we did before. You know, this was the fight that I was kind of most looking forward to see what's this guy all about. You know, is he the real deal? And beating someone like a Rafael Dos Anjos, you know, it certainly answers that question for me. And I think Dos Anjos obviously has been in a lot of fights. He's got some wear and tear, perhaps not as fast, or doesn't have the reaction time that he used to. I see slight deterioration in that regard, but he's still a phenomenal fighter who is dangerous in a lot of different ways. And the fact that Fiziev was able to stop the majority of those takedowns, find a way to not get positionally dominated on the ground, the fact that he was outstriking Dos Anjos for the majority of that fight, and I thought actually fought smarter than Dos Anjos as well, says a lot about his potential trajectory in the UFC. I think he's a guy that I would you know, feel pretty good about getting behind. And I think that he's a guy that is going to continue to rise and beat a lot of guys in that very difficult division of the UFC.
Seemed like the narrative on broadcast at the beginning of the fifth round was of an exhausted Fiziev and a fresher Rafael Dos Anjos. And I just have to say about RDA, I'm not going to get into the whole resting heart rate stuff, but he seemed fresh as a daisy to begin round five, despite just absorbing a lot of kicks, a lot to the body. I just marvel at his toughness and his ability to sort of sustain at this stage of what I believe is a Hall of Fame career. And, you know, he was in the fight going into the fifth round. Obviously, he has a wealth of five-round experience. This was his 11th UFC main event. But Rafael Fiziev obviously was not cooked. Obviously, he was urgent at the beginning of round five, and he went for it. I did think it was kind of an early stoppage. My man Mark Smith, you know, will let Chase Sherman practically kill Jared Vandera earlier in the night. You know, Mark, I think you're outstanding if you are listening. But, you know, letting the heavyweights, you know, really go at it. And then I thought Rafael Dos Anjos maybe deserved a beat or so more. I guess it's neither here nor there. I don't know. I have a lot of respect for RDA and a healthy respect for Rafael Fiziev, of course, with a huge win, biggest of his career.
I think that's fair. I would have liked to seen, you know, Mark allow RDA to try to get back into it. I think that he was certainly hurt. It was a beautiful shot, a left hook that went up and over that lead right hand of Dos Anjos, the southpaw. And it was a shot that Fiziev was actually kind of landing throughout that fight intermittently. And that one ultimately just crushed Dos Anjos. And yeah, I don't think he was completely out. He was trying to fight back. He was trying to do stuff. It was a little bit early for me, but Fiziev had him in trouble, absolutely. But, you know, to go back to your point about the Chase Sherman Vandera fight, yeah, I mean, that he certainly had a lot of leeway at that. And those are heavyweights that are landing devastating shots. These are just lightweights. But so I would have liked to seen some consistency there as well.
I mean, it's like Eve Levine in UFC 73 with Kemplo and Alvin Robinson. They're on the ground for 2 seconds. You know, hey, it is what it is. Obviously, it was a clean shot. And, you know, I'm sure Dos Anjos, as classy as ever, probably didn't even protest it. But, you know, I watched the entire card last night before going to bed. And then I woke up today and watched the main event. So it was fresh in my mind, sort of the juxtaposition between how those two situations were handled. All right. The Minutemen were out last week. Obviously, there was no Ray Longo Minute. He was at a wedding. We did the show late Sunday night, but we have Ray at the top of the show this week, and we are very, very privileged to be joined by the longtime trainer to the stars. He of Extra Rounds fame.
Oh, I man. Mean,
my goodness gracious. Look at your coloration today. I mean, you look black. You look great. You do look great.
Well, I mean, you know. Don't say anything. I look.
We got to get the rest of your. We got to get the rest of your hair in the show.
Oh yeah,
come on.
Where are we?
There we go. That looks beautiful.
It is amazing how gracefully you are aging. I mean,
that's gracefully.
I live in Florida. I exercise outside most every day. and you're like 50 shades of gray. I mean, you look 50 shades darker than I do.
Yeah, I'm telling you, first of all, if I don't sit out in the sun for that long.
Right, right.
But I've been riding the bike, you know, for like an hour and a half. So, and then some of those days are sunny. So I think that's what's happening. If I
we look like we're on a podium right
but
now.
But I mean, but even like the first 20 minutes in the sun of the season, I just brown quick.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say, but
heaven forbid I talk about your appearance. We should get right back to Rafael Puig.
No,
right?
Let me tell you something. But golden years, go fuck yourself. There's nothing. But golden what? This is horrible, Ken Flo. Don't get old. That's my advice to you guys.
Are you going to be one of those guys who has like black hair in his 80s? Like, you don't dye that?
I don't dye. Definitely don't dye it. No.
That is nuts, man. Fucking nuts. I have a white whiffle.
Well, when I see you this week, you'll see there's a lot of grays in there. You just can't see them.
I'm really excited to see you.
Oh, man, it's going to be somewhere. When are you getting in?
Early. I'm coming early Wednesday, and I'm going to be there a long time. We get off the air at 5 p.m. on Saturday. So
I was thinking,
you know, we'll see what your weekend holds.
I'm open for you, buddy.
And
that's
we could
even
do a podcast and a dinner potentially on Saturday night. I mean,
wow, Ken Flo. You know, you coming down? You flying?
I wish.
You know how much shit this guy has going on? That I mean,
come on, Kenny,
tactical
come
training
down.
And robot fights and the PFL and two children and vacations in South Carolina. I mean, no,
life is good. Life is good for Ken Flo. That's great.
What are you doing this weekend, Ken Flo? Be honest with us. He probably could come. He probably could fucking come. I'd have to call Clark.
He's at the country club.
This weekend, no, I'm just here with the family. I'm just hanging out. I'm hanging out by the beach with the family. Yeah. So.
By the beach, tell you the good old days.
We'll take that conversation off the air. But man, wouldn't it be great to get the band together? I don't know that the three of us have ever been in the same place.
At the same time.
I would
we
love
launched
it.
The podcast in 2015,
and that was a very, very nice text you sent me, John. Thank you.
That the Which text are you referring to?
I think.
All right.
Where
I'm gonna read it on the air.
I was out of the podcast. Kenny, I don't even know what I was looking at.
No. So if you are watching or listening to this on Sunday, July 10th, thankful to our man, Mark LaMonica, who was the impetus for the New York Post doing sort of a long form feature on me that ran in the Sunday New York Post, written by Neil Best, longtime sports media columnist.
Mark is a great guy. I don't know if you've met him, but you'd love him. He's just
great guy.
What a
really
nice guy.
Seems like a great father. Follow him on Instagram, the whole bit. He'll reach out to Ken Flo and thank you, Kenny, for everything. So I get a text right as they're doing this piece from Mark. Is the Ray Longo Minute still part of the Anik and Florian podcast going forward? The email from UFC Press about the new UFC Fight Pass podcast network didn't mention him in your information graph, but had him in the Extra Rounds podcast. I mean, just wondering how to handle for this feature piece.
Yeah.
So.
I feel like Rodney Dangerfield.
Respect.
I was thinking more like Benedict Arnold. I don't know.
Benedict? I thought it was one big happy family.
No, certainly not.
No. Oh my God.
So my response to the New York Post was, the Ray Longo Minute has been a part of the Anik and Florian podcast since episode one, when we launched the show in April of 2015. He has probably been a part of 350 of our first 355 episodes. He's not going anywhere.
Well, isn't that nice?
Was that the text? Yeah.
Yeah, that's the text. So I guess that guy never listened to the podcast once. That's what it meant to me.
I think part of it was because last week, circumstantially, you weren't on. And as long as people associate you with this show
And trust me, I wanted to be on.
So, all right. So we have a lot to get to. Aljamain Sterling and TJ Dillashaw, I believe, have a date. Is that accurate?
That would be inaccurate.
Okay.
As far as I know. What's the date?
Well, I thought I heard a rumbling or a rumor that maybe 2 months from now, September, pay-per-view. But I guess that's
well, there's definitely nothing signed. I could promise you that. But I haven't talked to Aljo in a week. So
all right, Bazooka back on the Contender Series. I saw
Bazooka back on the Contender Series. Charlie Campbell right after him, and then Nazim is right after him. So we got three guys on the Contender Series. I think back to back to back. The first 3 weeks.
So not a lot of local flavor on this Long Island fight this week. Probably why the New York Post is doing a feature on a Boston guy, you know. You like that, Ken Lowe? Fucking Boston guy getting that New York ink. You like that shit? Because mentioned
I guess
that my
they
dad
knew.
Is
I guess, yeah, right. They knew that your dad was from Seaford. I think that was the whole impetus. I'll use your word.
Yeah, none of the stuff I said about Boston made it in there. Like, you guys sure you want to profile a Red Sox fan? You know, take up the New York ink, you know. So, but it is interesting. There isn't a ton of local flavor. Billy Q no longer on the fight card. Shane Burgos is a local New Yorker, but not necessarily to that area. All right, let's get back to Fazeev and Dos Anjos if we could. You know, Dos Anjos has a huge fan in me. Anybody who's listening to the show knows that. But Rafael Fazeev is a real problem. Like, I wouldn't want to get kicked by that guy one time. Not one time, you know. And he just kicks so hard. He kicks so fast. I think he accrued a lot of valuable experience this night against a former world champion.
Yes.
And, you know, a lot of big fights on the horizon. Maybe Gaethje next. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he did. The best thing I think he did is conserved his energy better. You know, he didn't. I think that's why he made it to the fifth round. Because the Bobby Green fight, he started to gas out, I think, in a little bit in the third. But he did a way better job at, like, more technical, less explosions, which I think that's what's going to kill him when he starts really exploding over and over again. So I was really impressed with that. What a close fight. I don't know. Anybody know what the cards were going into the fifth round? Did we get that?
Cody will chase that. I believe I had 1, 2, and 3 for Fazeev and then round 4 for Dos Anjos. Ken Flo, any thoughts on the cards?
Yeah, that's pretty much how I had it. I think, forget if it was round 3 or 2 that was close in my mind. But yeah, I had Fazeev winning the first 3. So Dos Anjos had some work to do for sure.
Yeah.
So this kind of closes the championship book on Dos Anjos. You know, he did have some momentum, looked really good in the Moicano fight, even though there were some circumstances surrounding that main event.
Yep.
But for Dos Anjos at this point, you know, not that he won't fight again, but I think in a lot of respects, I think over 30 UFC fights, maybe over 20 UFC wins. This kind of closes the book on his championship legacy. But Fazeev wants Gaethje. What do you guys think about that? And do you think that will be next? I mean, I think it's a good time to call out Gaethje because, you know, Gaethje's had some championship opportunities, hasn't delivered. I think that makes a lot of sense. That might be the next fight for Fazeev. Ray, what do you think about Fazeev and Gaethje locking up?
I mean, come on, that's an exciting fight. I want to watch it. You know, definitely a fight that's not going 5 rounds, so it's going to be exciting. So yeah, I think that's a great fight, and I think Gaethje's always up for you know, for the challenge. Look, I think that the thing good for Fazeev is that these guys are getting older, and a lot of stuff comes with getting older. You know, even like that desire to really win. You know, maybe just to pick up a paycheck. I don't know. But even like Dos Anjos, it was a good fight. It was competitive. But the guy is 37. It's going to be hard to climb your way back at that weight, you know, at that age, I think. And I think a younger RDA probably wins that fight, you know. But, you know, how many – what was his layoff on this, too? He was out for
– No, not too long.
Not too long?
I honestly feel like – in a 30-footer, Dos Anjos at this stage of his career would be a little bit more exposed. I think he uses that 25-footer well, certainly was able to run a lot of clock in the clinch against Paul Felder. And I even think athletically, like, his entries for takedowns were pretty good, but Fazeev was more than up for that challenge. I just think stylistically, Ken Flo, at this stage of Dos Anjos' career, even though he does kick, and I just think a lot of it is just a war of attrition and trying to, you know, just clinch and take down, and that's kind of what his game is right now, you know.
Well, I think he was making a few mistakes in the clinch there. He was starting to figure it out. Like in round 4, he was looking way better. The way he was finishing and the way he was adjusting to try to get Fazeev on the mat, I thought was a lot better. And I also think he was forcing a lot of the clinches. Like Dos Anjos, when he strikes, was doing fine.
Without a doubt.
He was panicky. He was a little panicky out there, like he had to rush to the clinch all the time. So it seemed like, I don't know, he could have fought a little bit smarter and better. But, you know, Fazeev's a problem, and I think that's an interesting call-out and a smart call-out against Gaethje, who's been through how many wars now?
Yeah.
And, you know, Fazeev's got the speed advantage, I think. So Danny Rubes, right? Rubenstein, is he still he still managing?
Yeah, he was in his corner, yeah.
Smart game plan as far as taking the right fights at the right time.
Without a doubt.
I love that call out. That's good stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
Not that Gaethje isn't dangerous. Gaethje is still a very dangerous man. And it's a great fight. But you beat someone like Gaethje, people pay attention.
Yeah, and I tell you, and Kenny, you know that and beat him in like a highlight reel fashion, which is a possibility. But you know, as these guys get old, it comes with a lot of injuries they got to deal with. They got to change up their game plans. They're just not the guys they were 5 years ago. I don't give a shit what anybody says. It's almost impossible. You know what I mean? Because I'm with Kenny. RDA looked like he was having way more success standing up. The straight left was landing all the time. Like basically when he threw it, that's why I say I think a younger, more aggressive RDA probably wins that fight. You know, with all the other tools that he has.
Yeah.
But I just think it just sucks, man. I've seen it so many times, and you know, nobody really knows what's going on. But you know, it's hard getting a young guy to a fight uninjured. You know what I mean? This is just a tough sport, and you know, there's going to be certain guys that their injuries are going to be less, and I think those are the guys that are going to shine through. But you know, I agree with Kenny. I thought he was having way more success. I think just based on like the Bobby Green fight, I would have made him expend energy in that realm and then went to the takedowns. You're going to have to endure, right? You got to get through a little bit of, you know, tenseness there with the striking. But that would have been my approach. We're going to push him hard the first two, and then we're going to take him down and beat him up. You know, that I would have tried that. But you know, and I thought he looked like he was doing fine.
I agree absolutely with Ray. And I think for Gaethje, you know, to go back to Gaethje, I don't know if Gaethje takes that fight because, you know, I don't know how much he has to gain. I think there's guys with bigger names that are as dangerous or less dangerous that he could take on. He's got a lot to lose in that fight, and Fazeev's got a lot to gain if that fight happens. So it's going to take some negotiation. For sure to make that fight happen. But I like the call out.
Yeah, you know the fight I'd like to see. I'd like to see him go up against that guy Gamrot. Who's the guy that fought a couple
of times? Gamrot makes a lot of
fight. That's a fight I'd like to see, because that's a guy with a gas tank from hell, and he's not stopping. You know what I mean? You're gonna have to stop him early, or I think he'll run you into the ground, that guy. That pace that him and Sarukian put on was crazy, like crazy. It was triple the pace of last night. You know, like I don't know who's holding up to that. So that's
Gamrot can wrestle, boy.
Yeah, he can wrestle. That's a guy I'd like to see. I'd love to see that. Good attitudes on both guys. You know, they're both at the right time in their careers. You know, instead of picking a guy that's been around for a while, he's been in major fights. You know, I think sometimes you just lose that hunger. You know what I mean? And whether you're saying it or you're not saying it, I'm saying subconsciously, that's what happens a lot of times. You know, your brain is always going to say, look, I'm making another run. I can beat this guy. I can beat that guy. But the reality of it is you're not the guy anymore, you know? And that's a fight I'd rather see than the Gaethje fight. But the Gaethje fight would be explosive. But
The lightweights are pretty strategic, too. I do think a lot of them are trying to angle for specific matchups and will hold out. And more on that in a moment. Quickly want to get to the scorecards. Derek Cleary had it 38-38 going into that fifth round.
There you go.
Judges had it 3-1 for Rafael Fazeev. So in terms of selectivity among contenders, right? So Sean Strickland fought Alex Pereira, an unranked guy. Now, I don't know if Sean Strickland got a new contract or got more money to accept a fight against a wicked dangerous guy who wasn't even ranked. But right now, I believe Bilal Muhammad is ranked maybe 4 or 5 in the world, beat Vicente Luque, who was also 4 or 5 in the world, and now is going to fight Sean Brady, who in a lot of respects is the boogeyman at 170 pounds, who seemingly nobody wants to fight. I do think Bilal and Brady stylistically have some similarities. And I don't know why Bilal accepted that fight, you know, maybe establishing some promotional goodwill. Maybe he got more money, you know, maybe he just wants to prove, hey, I'll beat that guy, whatever it takes, you know. But, you know, Bilal was trying to angle for the Khamzat Chimaev fight, doesn't get it, and now gets Sean Brady, who you can argue is just as dangerous, 5 or 6 spots below him. you know, I don't think Fazeev, after beating a former world champion like this, is going to fight Mataj Gamrot, you know, no matter what the rankings say. I just don't see it, you know. But thankfully, you have guys like Bilal and Strickland, you know, who are willing to take fights and sort of keep, you know, the cycle moving.
Well, you don't think Fazeev will take the fight?
No, I don't. I don't think you call out somebody as high profile as Gaethje, top eight needle mover in the entire company, and then accept a fight against Gamrot, who many think lost to Sarukyan. I agree. Yeah. I share your enthusiasm. I'm just saying, like, you know, like you, there are people in Bilal's inner circle that are like, dude, why are you fighting a guy five or six spots below? You know,
who's Bilal? Who's Bilal's manager? Do you know?
Ali Abdelaziz.
Yeah, I mean,
but you know, like Cody's saying, Rafael.
You know, I'm going to say you're not getting more money for the fight. He's not getting more money for the fight, okay, for sure. Okay. That I would bet my life on it, but I don't know. I just think they know how to manipulate guys that want to fight, and they don't give a shit. And Bilal's that guy. He wants to fight, and they're going to use that, you know, to their advantage.
Well, and I think that's it.
You know, there's a lot of guys like that, you know.
Well, and I think if Bilal beats Sean Brady, I mean, then you might be able to really try to hold out for a championship opportunity, you know. I think
where is Brady?
Go ahead, Kempo. What do you got?
Yeah, the only thing I would say, it'd be impressive because of the win streak, but I don't think people are going to be like, he beat Sean Brady, give him a title shot. I don't think that's the case. I think 100%. More than anything else, I think Bilal matches up tremendously well against Sean Brady than he does against Chimaev. Chimaev's a problem, right, for anybody. Yeah. Like, Bilal likes to take people down. He uses his striking to get there. He's not taking down Chimaev, okay? Like, I love Bilal. That's a really tough matchup for him. He's going to have to strike his way to win against Chimaev, I think. And then against Brady, I think he does a lot of what Brady does, maybe even better, you know, in some ways. Maybe not as clean with his submissions as Brady. Brady's a much more dangerous submission threat than Bilal is, but I think Bilal positionally and wrestling-wise will probably be better than Brady. So I think it's a better match for him. So momentum-wise, consistency-wise, I agree with you, John, but I don't think the Sean Brady win is going to get fans and the UFC to be clamoring, you know, for a title shot for Bilal, unfortunately.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And look, Bilal's a guy that he's going to fight. You know, those are the guys, whether they like him or they don't like him, they're going to use him to their advantage. They're going to put him they'll probably try to overmatch him because I'm assuming they don't like him that much. You know what I mean? Because they're not pushing him a lot to, you know, like what you say, for a title shot. But, I don't think the Brady fight's going to move the needle because I think Brady needs a couple of more high profile fights, you know, to get his name right up there.
Yeah. You know, he's a great fighter, but he doesn't have that name power.
Yeah, right. Yeah. We know who he is, but I bet I walk out of my house and I ask the first 20 MMA fans who he is. I'm not sure they're going to say much. You know what I mean?
There's Bobby. There's Greg.
Yeah. No.
And Peter. He's from the Northeast, right in your backyard. Not really, but Philly.
I think it's an interesting conversation. Fighter. It's not a thing on him. It's like,
no, he is.
I love guys like that. They're great, and you don't know they're even there. Those are the guys I literally love. They're not making an asshole out of themselves, screaming, calling people out.
It's a dangerous fight for anybody.
The guy's a grinder, and he loves to fight, and he's going to go in there and fight. That we're just talking marketing now. We're not talking reality, you know?
Right.
That's why I say even with Fazeev, marketing wise, what a fantastic call out. You know what I mean? Because whatever Gaethje does really good, this guy is really good at. You know what I mean? Yeah. They want to trade leg kicks. I'm sure this guy's eating 1,000 leg kicks. He's used to it. You know what I mean? So
yeah, and that's where like the business side of fighting is so crucial, right? Yes. It's like, you know, Cody's making some great calls. He's saying, you know, like you'll get a Fazeev who's going to call out a Chandler or a Ferguson or guys that are at the end of their career, still good fighters. Big names, right? But kind of near the end of their career. Those are the guys that he's trying to target, which would give him that jump and that hype to get that championship fight. Where Sean Brady, great fighter. People in the know who Sean Brady is, but that's a tough out. But the general fan isn't going to know. And then that's why, you know, I think Gilbert Burns doing the right thing by trying to get a fight with Masvidal. Another guy, huge name, one of the biggest names in the UFC, guy at the end of the career, at end of his career, where he can, you know, get another big win and put himself back into, you know, title contention.
Yeah.
Without
I thought
doubt,
Lawrence Muhammad would have made a lot of sense. And also a shout out to Jack Hermanson, by the way, who was supposed to fight Darren Till in a few weeks. He's fighting the unranked Chris Curtis. And I believe Hermanson's probably in the top seven. And we'll have more on this with Brian Petrie. But Jack Hermanson, Ken Flo, by the way, opened a betting favorite against Chris Curtis. And immediately, Chris Curtis went to like minus 150, at least.
Wow.
Where I place my bets. So maybe that's all big gun Brian Petrie's action. I don't know. But it is interesting when you think about, you know, certain guys like Dominic Cruz, who literally like they're not going to fight Chito Vera until he's ranked above him. Like they are not trying to fight backwards. And I do believe if you're Bilal, it's like, all right, if I beat Vicente fucking Luque, right, in a rematch, in a main event, that opens the door for the Covingtons and the Chimaevs and the Gilbert Burns. And instead, he's fighting a guy five slots ranked below Gilbert Burns. So it tells me, yes, he wants to keep the momentum going. The best way to stay relevant with the fan base is to stay active and to fight. You know, you're telling me maybe he didn't get new money for the deal. Sean Brady is undefeated, but you're right. Yeah. It's the avid fans who really see the upside of that
right,
win.
Right, right, right. Yeah, without a doubt. And I think there comes a point where it's always easier to fight up than fight behind you. And I think that's where Fazeev is. I think there's probably five fights behind him that would be way worse for him than taking somebody. These guys build up their name, but then all of a sudden they're 38, 37. You know, it's a different ball game. You know, so what he did is genius for that. You know, Bilal, if he was smart, he would have had in his contract if he beat Luque that he's guaranteed a fight with A, B, or C. But that doesn't work like that. You know, and you get a lot of. You get a lot of pushback from the promoters. You really do. They you know, just go back to, remember Brendan Schaub did that thing on Joe Silva where the guy says, you want to listen to what he has to say about you? He put him on like the another line. The guy just pissed on him. You know what I mean? So, you know, they either like you or they don't like you.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't talk about my friend Joe Silva that way. Okay. I love both those guys. I love Schaub as well.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, we got another UFC Hall of Famer, Mark Ratner, coming up in about 60 seconds. And I want to give you a chance to say hi to Mark. I'm going to let you say hello, but I just had one more thing that I wanted to ask you both. So Alexander Volkanovsky broke his thumb, and in all likelihood, he'll be out till December, right? Which would be the time for his next title defense, right? We have a huge main event coming up in 6 days between Yair Rodriguez and Brian Ortega. Brian Ortega twice has challenged for the undisputed UFC featherweight championship. Yair Rodriguez hasn't competed very often, but he's never challenged for the belt. So if Yair Rodriguez wins, perhaps he's the guy. Maybe Josh Emmett in his late 30s is the guy. But Ken Flo, I'll start with you on this. I would submit to you one thug nasty Bryce Mitchell, who wrote on social media, and by the way, has the requisite winning streak to get a championship opportunity, as far as I'm concerned, and respect to Arnold Allen as well in this mix. But Thug Nasty sort of, and I'm paraphrasing, said, you know, a lot of these other guys maybe aren't calling out Volk because they don't think they have the chops to beat him. You know, Bryce really thinks he has the style and the tenacity and the tools to beat Volkanovski. So I've been thinking a lot about Volkanovski since his dominance of Max Holloway. And I just, before we get to Mark, I wanted to get your thoughts, Ken Flo, on Bryce Mitchell as viable featherweight challenger right now for Volkanovski.
I think he's one fight away from that. I think if you're going to beat someone like a Volkanovski, I think Bryce does have the grappling skills to challenge him in a lot of different areas there on the ground. But I would like to see his striking sharpen up a little bit more. Volkanovski showed that he has, you know, now a world-class striking for sure. You do that to a Max Holloway, you're doing something right. He just looked really clean and sharp. And more
crazy,
sophisticated than a lot of strikers out there, man.
Crazy.
What he was doing is kind of next level stuff. So I love Bryce Mitchell. I love his attitude. But I think I'd like to see at least one more fight and some sharpening of his striking skills first.
Yeah, I got to tell you, first off, I didn't get a chance to see you guys last week, but Volkanovski hit another level to me. That was a phenomenal performance against a guy that's been really doing – really good. I thought Max was going to give him way more problems in that fight, and I couldn't have been more wrong. Volkanovski, and again, he didn't play it safe. He went for it. He's a problem, you know. So the Bryce Mitchell thing is, man, I love Bryce Mitchell. I'd like to look. You got to start changing up the fights and giving guys that haven't fought yet a chance to fight. So I would say, I don't even know if one fight would help him, Kenny, with the way Volkanovski looked. I mean, he was sharp. The way he's been performing lately is on another level, and he looks healthy, and he just looks dynamite, man. That was a fantastic performance. Like, I can't say enough about it. Just, man, his combos were crisp. They were fast. He was, the way he could hit and exit without getting hit, he made.
Beautiful.
You know, when you look at, like, the levels of even what Holloway did to Calvin Kattar, and then what he did to Holloway, this is crazy. I mean, that they're, and Kattar, I love, you know, I almost always used to think Kattar would have been a better matchup for Volkanovski. I don't even know now. This guy's just, he was on fire, you know, but I'd like to see maybe Calvin Kattar against Bryce Mitchell, and then the winner maybe gets something.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
That's a good one.
I'm just telling you, for me as fan and commentator, the intrigue for me, even right now, and Volkanovski probably a 4-1 favorite against Bryce Mitchell, but lock the door behind those two, getting ready to call that fight. I'd be very curious to see how that would play out. All right, now I want to welcome in one of my dearest friends. This man's in a lot of Hall of Fames. UFC Hall of Famer, International Boxing Hall of Famer, just to name two of them. Many of you know him, of course, as the UFC's VP of Regulatory Affairs. The great Mark Ratner is with us after a very busy Saturday in Vegas. My man, you see Kenny Florian and Ray Longo. Good morning, sir. How we doing?
Good morning. Hi, Ray. Hi, Ken Flo. I'm delighted to be with you guys. And it was a fun Saturday yesterday. Two NBA games and our Apex fight. So it was a good day for me.
Beautiful. Do you see how tan Ray Longo is, Mark? My God.
We can barely see him. He's that tan. That's it.
But Mark, I want to say congratulations. You've always been a gentleman. I followed you when you were, you know, the commissioner of boxing. You did an outstanding job, as you did when the UFC was what a beautiful find that was for them. You were really instrumental in getting them going. So yeah, you've had a great career, and nobody deserves being in the Hall of Fame more than you. And just congratulations, man, on everything.
Thanks, man. I'm delighted to see you guys, and I hope to see you soon.
All right, Ray, we're going to let you get on out of here unless you have a parting shot, because I'm going to hit Mark Ratner very hard today. I'm actually not going to
hit him hard. Don't you touch Mark Ratner. What's the matter with you? Show some respect. That he's a Hall of Famer. Hey, Kenny, can you give this guy some manners, please?
I got to talk to him after the show. I'm going to talk to him.
Listen, shout out to Jake Shore. Him and his team have been at the gym preparing for his fight. What a bunch of great guys all the way from Wales to come in. And, you know, I just I love seeing that, man. I've been treated so good all across the world. Wherever we go, we always have a gym to train. I love opening up my gym to guys that come from far away, because I know how crazy that could be and stressful to find a place. So shout out to those guys. I wish them the best of luck on Saturday. They just seem like salt of the earth people. And the kid looks fantastic. Whatever I've seen in the gym, unbelievable. So just great bunch of guys. I want to say hello to them, because I love meeting new people, especially when it's, you know, not, you know, 10 minutes away. So,
yeah, no, that's exciting. We're going to get to Jack Shore later in the main event challenge, but don't forget to pick up that Sunday New York Post, Ray, and I'll see you in a few days, my man.
Oh, I'm definitely picking that up. I'm just going to look for my name, and if I don't see it, I'm not even going to read it. Right, I'll talk to you guys later. Take it easy.
Right.
Congrats, John. And Mark, congrats again, buddy. Nobody deserves it more than you. Ken Flo, I'm out of here. Take it easy.
There he is. The Ray Longo Minute every week here on the Anakin Florian podcast. And now we go three wide and put Mark Ratner there in the center. Of course, many of you know him as the UFC's VP of Regulatory Affairs, and he's got a new book out. It's right here. It's called Ringside, My Life Outside the Ropes and the Octagon. What a legend. I've been going through this all morning, my man. I don't even know where to begin. But before I get into the book, so you had NBA Summer League duties yesterday, and then you rifle over to the UFC Apex. So what can you tell us about your day and all that you were able to ingest yesterday there in Nevada?
I think most importantly, I went to watch my grandkids play 8 and under hoops. That was the start with it about 9 o'clock yesterday morning. Then I went over to the Thomas and Mack. I did have the C's in the Miami Heat, so that was fun. And Boston got beat, I think, by 9 or 10. It's really hard to see what kind of teams these are because they're playing so many guys and a lot of people you'll never see again. But I did see Poncherro play the night before, and he's the real thing.
Yeah, it sounds like. I actually did bet on the Summer League for the first time yesterday, knowing that you were going to be there. And again, these are just handicappers sending plays, right? It's not me handicapping the board. And we went 2-1, so we were in the black. So historically speaking, just to sort of get this out of the way and for my own personal curiosity, having gone through the book a little bit, and by the way, Ringside is available at UFCstore.com, also on Amazon and really wherever you get your books, Ringside, My Life Outside the Ropes and the Octagon. You joined the Nevada State Athletic Commission in 1985, became executive director in 1992, and then you joined the UFC in 2006. So I guess I'm just curious, in 2006, obviously in hindsight, you made a great decision. I'd imagine your wife agrees. But what was your thought process at that stage of your life, professionally speaking, to leave the friendly confines, so to speak, of the commission world and join the UFC at that time?
Well, Lorenzo at one time was a commissioner for the Nevada Athletic Commission. And in late 2005, he came to me and said, have you ever thought about leaving the commission? I said, no, I've got the best regulatory job in the world. And he said, well, we'll talk early 2006. And quite simply, Lorenzo's a great salesman, but he brought in the closer, Dana. And it was that simple. And I told him I couldn't come till after a De La Hoya fight. I think it was Cinco de Mayo in 2006. The next Monday after that fight, I came over, and I still love to go to boxing, but I've never looked back. It was the second best decision. The first best decision, obviously, getting married, but the second one was coming to the UFC.
So when I left ESPN in 2011, there were a lot of people in my life who suggested, hey, man, you know, it took you forever to get to Bristol, Connecticut. You're finally there. And now you're going to go do this mixed martial arts thing. You know, you've never punched a heavy bag in your life. You don't know anything about that sport. And certainly, you know, you can argue both sides of my coin, I guess. But have you ever had a conversation with your wife? It's like, hey, honey, I think we made the right decision, right? I don't know if it's reflectively after you're inducted into the Hall of Fame or after you get MMA regulation done in New York, but was there ever a conversation with your family about that decision and sort of the quality of the decision you made at that time, not knowing exactly what you were walking into?
Well, the first thing is with Lorenzo and Dana, we never talked about anything but America. We didn't talk about the world. So I had no idea what the job would entail except going to different states trying to get the sport approved. And obviously, New York was the cherry on top, and it took us 8 years. But no, my wife, she supported it. She just, the only thing she really told me when I left, she said, you have to get a contract for at least 3 years because you're leaving a good job.
And yeah.
So that was it.
That's good. Mark Ratner with us here on the Anik and Florian podcast. So 20 years ago, I'm getting started in sports radio, probably around the time we used to have the great Mark Ratner on the Mouthpiece Boxing Show. He would always come on with little peons like us, you know, I got to say. But my grandfather said to me probably, I don't know, 2002, that if you take 5 minutes every day to write down a couple of sentences about your day in 15 or 20 years, you'll have a memoir. And really wish I had done that because my memory isn't great. Your memory's pretty good. How was the process for you in terms of jogging your own memory when you went back to write this book?
The key was having a writer help me, a ghost writer. And we would talk probably about 2 hours a week for 5 to 6 months. And every time he'd ask a question, it would remind me of something else. And So what would happen is I would think of other things, and then he would send me a chapter, and I would edit it and make a couple changes. And I don't think I could ever just sit by a computer and write things down. So right. It turned out I wasn't sure how it would turn out, but I'm very happy with it. And I wrote it more for my family and my friends. I'm not trying to be a bestseller or anything else. That's all I wanted to do, and it came out good.
Oh, Mark, you've been like – probably one of the biggest sports fans that I've ever met. I mean, John is one of the biggest sports fans I've ever met. You make him look like a noob. You've been involved as an executive director. You know, you've refereed a bunch of college games and things like that. Is there a top three for you as far as events that you've been a part of that were most memorable? I know it's kind of a difficult question because I know you've been around so many different sports and events, but.
Well, the highlight of my officiating career was, working a game at Notre Dame, to walk on that field have the leprechaun dance around me. I watched Rudy a couple of days beforehand. I touched the sign to say play like a champion today. Had Charlie Weiss yell at me for 3 hours. That was my highlight in football. In boxing, the two most memorable things, obviously, were the bite fight. And the most crazy thing ever still was a fan man flying into the ring with a propeller strapped to his ass. And there's nothing in the rule book that says, what do you do now when a guy flies into the ring? So those are my most memorable moments.
That's awesome. Ken Flo played soccer at Boston College, but I know he doesn't have the venom or the hate for Notre Dame that I do as a BC football fan.
That's cool. Mark, I wanted, you mentioned Mike Tyson real quick there. There's some good Mike Tyson stuff in the book. Is there a story or I don't know, some kind of tidbit history that you can kind of talk about that was most memorable for you?
One day I was driving my kids to school and I saw this guy jogging by, and he knew me from the commission, and he stopped, and it was Tyson jogging by himself, and he said, and he has a little bit of a lisp, and he said, "Hi, Mr. Rathner," and said hello to the kids. Considering everything, and I was the face of the commission, he's always been very nice to me, didn't hold anything against me. I'm the one who had to say, you got to give us $3 million of your purse, and just a crazy time. But whenever I see him now, when he walks into a fight, he's still the most popular guy there. It's amazing. He is just... Right now, I'd say he's at the top of his career as an entertainer, as a writer, as a stand-up comedian. I'm happy where he is in his life.
Yeah. And it seems like the cannabis he gets is a lot better than the stuff they have down here in South Florida. I don't know.
I think there's probably some truth to it. I think he's in the market for that. I think he's in the business of it.
Yeah.
He is.
So, Mark, perhaps most interesting for me is some of the stuff on the MMA legalization in the book and just the tremendous lengths that you and Lawrence Epstein and everybody else went to get mixed martial arts regulated statewide across the U.S. So the momentum from one state to the next, right? I'd imagine, and you touch on this in the book, but when, you know, you get a certain state done, to be able to be buoyed by that, to go to the next state and say, hey, you know, just next door, we got this done. I'd imagine that gave you a tremendous leg to stand on as you, you know, knocked one state off after the next.
Yeah, especially from the economic sense. We're saying to Pennsylvania, you know, this state right next to you is doing it. Your people are going over the border to New Jersey or something.
Right.
You're losing money here.
Right.
So that was one of the process. And I always want to give credit to Mike Mersch, who was our great friend, who I needed a lawyer with me wherever we went. I could talk to the regulators, but to have the lawyer talk to the attorney generals and the different people was a big key, and he was very special for me.
Yeah. No, I remember you, me, and Mersch used to travel a lot together when I lived in Las Vegas several years ago. Right. So what are your emotions like on fight night compared to, say, 20 or 30 years ago? And I ask that, you know, Mark always comes over to the broadcast booth and gives me the handshake or the fist bump and helps give me confidence. And obviously I have my own emotions on fight night, trying to get my head around the next 8 hours or so. But for you, what is it like, you know, walking into T-Mobile Arena for UFC 276 compared to, you know, the bite fight way back in the day?
No, it's a lot different because I was worried about so many, for boxing, so many different facets of it, to make sure the ropes were good and the, in the ring, make sure that all the inspectors are ready. And so I had a little checklist. Now, when I come to the fights, the most important part would be to check in with Zach, our producer, or directors, and just in case I need to talk to them. But there's always a feeling of excitement. I like the way the crowd grows as the fights progress. And there's a different energy in MMA than boxing. The crowd's younger, obviously. And the music, it's like a rock and roll concert with fights in between for me.
Yeah.
And then when you get to the main event, it's just a very exciting. And but I think the energy is really what gets to me.
Yeah. Do you have any of these internationals on your docket coming up? Are you going to London or Paris or no?
I'll go to New York next week, then right. London after that. And I'm planning on Paris. Yes.
Wow.
couple more minutes here with the great Mark Ratner. Again, you can get the new book, Ringside, My Life Outside the Ropes and the Octagon, at Amazon.com right now. Born in Phoenix, Arizona, and this is just a selfish question, but raised in Las Vegas, you went to Reno. Do you have any rooting interest for the Phoenix, Arizona sports teams whatsoever?
None whatsoever. I was born there, but we left, I think, when I was maybe 4 or 5 years old, moved to Southern California. My fandom has sort of changed. I was a big Dodger fan. I'm not quite as big a fan. I don't know all the players like I once did. I became a Red Sox fan because I really was never a Yankee fan. And by going to Boston, walking around there, made me a sort of a Boston fan. Having our employee Sean being a relative of Brady's made it even more special.
Sure.
So, I do like all sports. I just was watching Wimbledon before we came on here. So
yeah.
It's a great time to be a sports fan.
Oh, and I love those few minutes with you before a UFC event. And candidly, more often than not, you know, Mark and I are probably talking about the Belmont Stakes that is just about to, you know, start or something relatable in the sports world. But well, I congratulate you on the new book, and you've been a dear friend and comrade for me on the road for many years. And again, wish you nothing but the best with this project. And you know, I hope you're by my side for 20 years to come, my man. You know, it's crazy. As a sports fan, for me, as I get older, like I have a soft spot for the New York Jets, like the Toronto Maple Leafs. I used to hate that team as a kid. And now those fan bases are so starved. Like, if you could pick one team, Mark, to win a championship next, like, do you have enough of a rooting interest for one team in sports? Like, for me, no doubt about it, it would be the Boston Celtics because they just came so close. Like, do you have one team that you would root for, like, to win a title next?
Well, I was a good Cub fan. I was really happy when they finally got to be good. When it comes to the NBA, I was actually hoping that the Nets would be a real team with the three superstars. And would they play 14 games together in 3 years or something? I know. That was a big disappointment for me. I think the league's better. The NBA's better when the Knicks and the Lakers are strong. That makes it more of a better time. But all these small market teams, I want to see what happens in New Orleans with Zion. Maybe they'll finally get some guys around him, and they'll do good. So the NBA is just it's exploding right now.
No, you're right. The NBA's on fire, and the Memphis Grizzlies. I don't have a soft spot for the New York Knicks yet. I don't know if that will ever materialize. You know, I think the Knicks and the Yankees are on an island by themselves. But he is the UFC Hall of Famer, International Boxing Hall of Famer, Mark Ratner. And again, the book is Ringside, My Life Outside the Ropes and the Octagon. Appreciate you getting up for us today. And I look forward to seeing you on Long Island here in a few days.
All right. I'll see you soon. And Ken Flo, didn't you fight once at 170 or something? How did that happen?
55 and 45. Yeah, I'm a little bigger than the last time you saw me, Mark.
No, you're amazing, and I thank you, both of you, and Ray too. And thanks for having me on.
Anytime, you're the man, Mark. See ya. Great to see you. There he is.
See you next
UFC.
Week.
It's VP of Regulatory Affairs, Mark Ratner, with us on the Anik and Florian podcast. Absolutely love that guy. You know, drop a cannabis like he don't miss a beat. You know, just a tremendous. Tremendous individual. And you know, I have to say, Kenny, you know, there was a time in my career where I was hosting the Mouthpiece boxing show, and we might have had 100 listeners, you know. And so when certain guys, you know, Michael Buffer, Joe Tessitore, Max Kellerman would come over, you know, they didn't necessarily want to give us the time of day, you know, could barely look us in the eyes when we were interviewing them. But you could always count on Ratner, you know, the real fucking article from day one.
Dude, absolutely. I mean, he has overseen some of the biggest fights in history. And from the moment I met him as the executive director of the NSAC to when he got, you know, the big job over the UFC, he has been exactly the same. Always humble, always a gentleman, always a passionate sports fan. Love that guy.
One thing I didn't get to, he brought up the Greg Hardy inhaler situation in his book. And, you know, the illegality of it, I still don't think we have total clarity on when you can use an inhaler, right? Like, can you use it on the bus ride over to the live event? Can you use it in the locker room? Seems like you can't use it in between rounds. All right, before we get to the pronunciation of the week, I just wanted to put a bow on UFC Fight Night, Dos Anjos versus Fazeev. Very happy for Chase Sherman, you know, to get a bonus, right, to get a win. I believe his last fight against Alexander Romanov, he was the biggest betting underdog in UFC history. And he's just been through a lot, you know. Some issues after surgeries with getting like a bad drug in his system. Like, he's just been through a lot. So I'm very happy for Chase. I know you're happy for Firas Sahabi's younger brother, Eamon, who got a win over Ricky Tercios in a fight that wasn't necessarily great. And then fight of the night, Jamie Mullarkey and Michael Johnson. You know, I think for a lot of people, this is a great lesson in why maybe you should bet on baseball and not mixed martial arts, because Michael Johnson was plus 230 or so. And you got dudes walking to the window to cash those tickets. And it goes to Jamie Mullarkey.
I know. Listen, Mullarkey fought his ass off, right? And this is not a knock on him. But I thought if you're scoring fights the way that we've been talking about for the last several weeks when we had Sean Sheehan on and all that, Michael Johnson, I thought, should have won that fight. It was 2-1. He won the first round and the third round, in my opinion. And I think a lot of people felt the same way, except for those judges. I also think if we go back to the Chase Sherman and Vandera fight,
yes,
those guys had Sherman winning that fight. Sure, they had Sherman winning that fight, whereas I thought Vandera was winning those first two rounds. I thought Sherman needed that knockout to win, which made it all the more dramatic and impressive. But yeah, man, I think it goes to show you that really the judges just need to be better at that job, at their jobs. I don't think there's a scoring criteria that is going to fix all of those issues. But I don't know. I think it left myself and a lot of fans, I think, still confused about how to score fights. So whatever.
And certainly I have been defensive of the judges at times. I think by and large, it has not been a great run for those with scorecards that matter. All right. If we missed anything at Anik Florian Pod, but in the nature of spinning it forward, we got a big one coming up this weekend. UBS Arena, Long Island, New York. UFC Fight Night, Ortega versus Rodriguez. Prelims, 11 a.m. Eastern on ESPN, Saturday. Main card on ABC. It is time for the pronunciation of the week, as we call on Cody Merrow. What's up, kid?
I'm back.
You look.
I got buried last week. I just got the dirt off of me after you guys buried me in a coffin after last week.
After last week's pronunciation of the week?
Correct,
or just
yes.
In general? Okay, yeah.
We're New Englanders. Like, we like to bust balls, but there I was 6 feet under.
It's been a bit,
I hope that nobody clips that. That was a terrible visual for me.
I looked away. So yeah, I mean, you're several below 500. So
yeah,
hopefully this isn't a repeat. Was this a repeat or no?
I don't think so.
All right. So this man is a ranked flyweight. He competes on the main card against Matt Schnell this Saturday afternoon. You can see it on the American Broadcasting Company. Cody Merrow, of whom am I speaking, brother?
Well, the main cad from a place that calls itself New York City, but is not New York City. Let me just stake my claim there. If you ain't in Manhattan, you're not in the city. That's all I want to say.
Okay.
But Sumu Darji.
That sounded good, Sumu Darji. Let's hear him.
Sumu Darji, Zhangzu Xiongyin. Sumu Darji, Zhangzu Xiongyin.
Yeah.
Sumu, is he saying Darji? Sumu? He's saying Sumu Darji?
Yeah.
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 It's hard to know.
What did you say? Sumu Darji? Yeah, I think he said Sumu
Darji. That's what I said.
Okay. All right.
Sumu Darji with the finish. Wow.
Pop me in there. It'd be John Anik, the other guy, and then me. And then that'll be the hierarchy of the commentary. So just call me in on short notice. I'm ready.
I thought that was a pretty good fight ending.
Me too, John.
Yeah, I thought so too. Sumu Darji is the pronunciation of the week. And then I have a special treat for Ken Flo. Cody, stay there for a second. So
what do you got?
This is one of my favorite audio files that we have. The guy who's fighting Brian Ortega in the main event. I just want you to hear Yair Rodriguez in all his fucking glory say his name. I can listen to this file all day. Just listen to Yair El Pantera say his name for the masses.
Well, part of me thinks you do, John. Like, do you go for runs and Heidi sends you like a 1 hour loop of like
that? Like, actually, would be a good suggestion at Bruce Buffer. No, I'm just kidding. But I do believe that
Bruce don't do cardio.
Just
come on.
Listen to the pronunciations over and over and over again. You know,
Well, let's listen to this one. Yair Rodriguez.
Yair El Pantera Rodriguez.
Oh.
Yair El Pantera Rodriguez.
Oh.
No one rolls so the R's like Rodriguez.
I can't do maybe it you genetically. Do. You do.
That's nice, rolling of the R's.
Yeah,
it's incredible. Well, Cody,
things, not R's.
Thanks for your contribution.
I roll L's. That's about it. You guys get that.
That's good. Yeah, backwards. Great flavor. We'll see you on the back end of the program for the Marrow Seconds. But now we are going to spin it forward. And I know perhaps Ken Flo was a little bit surprised that he would be charged with making 7 predictions for UFC Fight Night, Ortega versus Rodriguez. Let us get to the main event challenge.
It's the main event challenge. Anik.
The time is most definitely now.
Florian.
I finished fights. I'm going to do everything possible to win.
The main event challenge. The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
And join us as he does every week for the main event challenge from the MMA Take podcast. And
yes.
Of course, from the Anik Emporium podcast as yes. Brian Petrie, MMA on Twitter. Brian Petrie is with us. BP, what's up, my man?
Hey, what's up? Taking some lumps last night. Took some lumps. Took some big old L's. Michael Johnson. I was cashing my fucking ticket. I couldn't believe it. I was texting my guys like, we got this one.
It wasn't a horrible decision, but it was a bad one. You know what I mean? That's pretty clear. Like,
I entertained the masses on Twitter. I got a lot of people were like, what do you mean? I had it from Malarkey. He dropped him in round one. I was like, hey, Malarkey got dropped too. It's clear that the last thing they see is what they attribute. I said,
right.
They both got dropped, cancel out. Michael Johnson outstruck him. Second round, clearly Malarkey. Third round, Michael Johnson got like a second win. Start using his right hand more, putting punches in front of it instead of loading up on his left. I thought it was clear as day. 1-3.
Clear 2-1. Johnson. Yeah, absolutely.
And like I said, that was my big bet of the weekend. And then I had RDA and then my slime ball lost. And we're taking some lumps, but we're going to battle back here. I like some dogs. I got my dog goggles on. I like some dogs this week. So we'll see.
So my brother called me and asked me what I would take in the main event since I wasn't calling the fight. I said, Fazeev plus 150 by knockout, but that didn't look like a great ticket for much of that. But, you know, I'm really thankful I'm contractually prevented from betting on the sport. You know, I got smoked betting baseball yesterday. I lost $295, but you know.
Hey,
I mean, this stuff
the
is
game
just
we
nuts,
play,
man.
John. It's the game you know, we but play, if, John.
But you play, like for me, if I was able to bet MMA, I bet Michael Johnson plus 230, whatever. I don't know. Yeah. Was it a little bit less than that? You know,
and I got him at plus 200 on the screws.
Yeah. To me, you rip up enough of those tickets, you find something else to bet on, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what it is. I was arguing with a guy and it wasn't getting contentious. And I said, buddy, this is what the best thing about MMA is it's a lot of it's so subjective that it creates these arguments, these disagreements, which is part of the fun. Like, I'm not taking this seriously. Yeah. I was pissed off because I put a couple unis 2-1 and I'm counting my money. But it is what it is. It's a game we play. I mean, I'm gonna bounce back. We're gonna be all right.
All right. Well, let us rifle through some of these selections because this is a very deep card coming up on Long Island. You know, I had a hard time eliminating fights, right? We're not picking the featured prelim between Punahele Soriano and Dalsha Lungiambula, right? But we do have 7 picks and we are gonna pick one prelim because it is a huge prelim in the bantamweight division live on ESPN. This fight will probably be around 1 p.m. Eastern. Bantamweight division, 14th-ranked Jack Shore, minus 170, taking on number 11 Ricky Simone, who is plus 145. Shore out of Wales, as you just heard from Ray Longo. Those guys have been cross-training a little bit there at Longo Weidman MMA. Jack Shore undefeated, 16-0. Ricky Simone, 7-2 in the UFC, and far and away, Brian, Shore's toughest test to date.
Yeah.
How do you handicap this one at 135 pounds?
I got to be honest with you, this is a pass for me as a betting. This is as close as it gets. Listen, if you're a value boy, lean on Simone. Don't call him Simon. It's Simone. Trust me, I've ran into that problem before. But he's really fucking good, and he's fought styles like this. I mean, he fought Marab early in his career, which I thought he was losing the fight until that bullshit, you know, when they said what it was with the weird choke or whatever. I don't want to go down that road. But he fought these intense grapplers that are constantly trying to grapple. And Jack Shore is very similar to that. He's a little bit different build, longer, apparently very, very strong. His striking's come a long way. But this is as close as it gets, man. I think Shore's never fought anybody like Simone. And I think Simone is really coming his own here. I think his striking's coming a long way. I think he looks powerful. I think his cardio is on point. He's up in Oregon, you know, in that camp, Gracie Baja, and he's doing some great things. I think he's a little under the radar. You know, he popped up to 45 for a while during COVID, and right. Now he's back at 35. But I've sung Jack Shore's praises. I think the kid's special. I think his timing on the feet's really good, even though his striking is still coming a long way. I think he's very dangerous on the ground. I think he's going to be more of a submission threat on the ground. I just think they're going to cancel each other on the ground, and it's going to come to power versus technique and a little bit. You know, Jack Shore has some really great straight punches. I'm going to go chalk. I'm going to go Shore, but it's a pass on the betting side of me. This is just going to be my pick. It's Jack Shore.
Yeah, Ken Flo, Simone is plus 145 here. I thought it would be a little bit closer, not a pick 'em per se. I thought Jack Shore would be favored, but Simone has won 4 in a row. Big knockout of Rafael Dos Anjos last December. He has a little bit of Paddy Pimblett in him insofar as he does blow up between fights. If you've seen Ricky Simone on social media this week, I mean, he is literally shredded in outstanding shape. But he does let himself go a little bit between fights. Big opportunity for both Simone and Shore on a big show. Ken Flo, you going with the favorite Shore or the underdog Ricky Simone?
Man, fantastic fight. Really curious to see what happens in this one. Geez, I've slept on Simone a lot. Unfortunately, I'm going to go the other way again here with Jack Shore. I do think that Jack is a little bit cleaner with some of the things he does. You know, I think it probably comes down to the wrestling, you know, whoever's able to kind of dominate that aspect, I think, you know, whoever gets on top, I think is going to have a big advantage because everything else is really damn close. But I like Jack here. You know, see what he's done so far and to be undefeated at this stage of his career is very impressive. But this is where the killers, you know, start to appear for him at this point at his trajectory. So let's go Jack here.
It's like I'm too close to this, but like I see Jack Shore versus Ricky Simone, and I think like UFC Fight Night main event. I fucking love that fight. I mean, Simone is just really all offense all the time. All right, first fight on the main card. This fight was to go down a couple weeks ago. Of course, Misha Tate and Lauren Murphy at flyweight. So Misha Tate, the minus 175 favorite, 10 cents more a favorite than she was a couple weeks ago. Lauren Murphy, plus 150. First fight back for Murphy since she failed in her attempt to wrest the belt away from Valentina Shevchenko last September. Misha Tate has fought twice since she ended a 4.5-plus-year retirement. Now she changes weight classes, Kempo. What do you think about Tate here making her UFC flyweight debut against Lauren Murphy?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting fight. I do think it's a good fight for Misha in that I feel like all the things that Lauren does well, I feel like Misha does a little bit better. I do think that Lauren is still very scrappy. Misha, you know, at this stage of her career, who knows if she still has that willingness to really get down and dirty if she needs to be. I think she does, but you never know with some of the fighters that have been around a long time. I do think that, you know, she has a different approach, a different mentality, which I love to see. I think she's going to be more technical here in this fight, and that's going to be the difference. But let's go with Misha here.
Brian, what do you think? Misha Tate, Lauren Murphy, who do you like?
This is a classic. You're tinkering with it because I had my pick lined up a couple weeks ago, and now I've been thinking about it. The producer to the stars, Cody Marrow, said he was going to hammer Lauren Murphy at that dog price. And here I am going to go Misha Tate. And I really, the reason I do is because since Misha had birth to her child, she's come back and she's looked just in phenomenal shape. Even at 35, she was shredded. And she goes, oh, I can make 25. So I'm not super worried about the weight cut because I think she's doing it right. Seen the Instagram photos, she seems to be in shape. And Lauren Murphy, I just think she's going to be a little too slow. She's good everywhere, but she's not great everywhere. And I think Misha's going to kind of expose that with her takedowns. I think Misha's very good on the ground. I think she has very good submissions. And she can get really, I mean, as pretty as she is, she can get fucking mean in there and then get real scrappy and slug it out. And she's tough. She's got a good chin. So I'm going to go Cupcake Tate here on this one.
All right, next up at featherweight. The all-action hero, Shane Burgos, minus 195, taking on Charles Air Jourdain, who is plus 165. So question beckons, guys. Will Shane Burgos become a legitimate title contender, the guy that many thought he would become, right? Because I say all-action hero somewhat tongue-in-cheek, right? It sounds great. He is that, but he has aspirations well beyond just being an exciting fighter. So if he is to make good on those expectations, Bri, he's got to beat Charles Jourdain. How do you handicap this one at 145 pounds?
This was the toughest one for me to pick. I mean, besides Simone and Shore, because I'm not going to have action on that fight, this was the toughest one for me. Like, I like Charles Jordan. I think his technique, I think his striking is very good. It's sometimes he gets caught up in it. If you look at the Julian Rosa fight, like when he won it, when Rosa wanted to brawl, he entertained that idea, and then he kind of fell behind again and got choked out. Shane Burgos is boxing slick. His chin is slick. He's fucking huge for 45. Still, I'm going to tweet it Saturday. You can fucking put your money on it. I was like, how does this guy make 45? Because I think he's in his career at 55. And I think, you know, he's 31 now. As you get a little older, I think 55 is going to help that chin a little bit. Not that his chin's a problem, but that Edson Barboza knockout scared me. That delayed reaction terrified me. I was like, what is happening? Like, his brain was like, no, I'm good. And then he just collapses. That was pretty scary. But the guy has absolute nails. His boxing's really good. His power's really good. And he gets in and out. His cardio is actually really impressive, too, for being so big. I leaned Jordan early on. I think Jordan, you know, showed up and showed some submissions. He's coming off that guillotine choke. And I like him. But, man, this could be fight of the night written all over. I'm going to go Shane Burgos. I'm going to go chalk. It's a little wide for me. I don't like how it's almost 2-1. I just think when the tough gets going, he's been there a little more than Jordan. I think Jordan's more of a finesse guy. And I think Burgos in New York, he's going to fucking want to bring it. So give me Burgos, even though I do think the line is a little wide.
Burgos has fought so much in New York, all over the state for the UFC. Outpointed Billy Q last November. That was at Madison Square Garden. He is still ranked now number 14 in the world. Ken Flo on the other side, the much improved Charles Jourdain. He's won 3 of 4, submitted Lando Venata earlier this year. How do you handicap his chances here against Shane Burgos?
You know, Jourdain is a very dangerous fighter, and he also has a knack for finding a way to make adjustments and like coming back and getting a win. But I think this is pretty straightforward. Sometimes I think Jourdain, while he does have some flashy stuff and will sit and watch a little bit, he can get overly aggressive and overly emotional, which is what you don't want to do against someone like a Shane Burgos, I think. Shane Burgos is very consistent, stays pretty composed for the most part. And we saw him in his performance against Billy Q in his last one against a guy who was continue to come forward, throwing a lot of offense at him, but Shane was just kind of picking him apart and throwing some devastating shots. And I think he's going to be able to do that here again against Jourdain, who I think has a lot of potential, but isn't quite there yet to beat someone like Shane. So let's go Burgos as well.
All right, next up at flyweight, the streaking Sumu Dargi, -240, Matt Schnell, +200. So Schnell still number 8 in the rankings, just 1 win for him though since 2019. Last fight with Brandon Royval was a fight of the night, Brian, despite the fact that it lasted just 2 minutes and 14 seconds. On the other side, Sumu Dargi has won 3 in a row. He'll try to go from number 11 in the world to the top 8 or so. At the very least, he is favored to do so. Brian Petrie, which way are you going here with the men at 125 pounds?
I think I might have been the only person alive that watched MTV Caged, and that's where we first got to see Matt Schnell, Louisiana boys down there. I like Matt Schnell. My biggest problem with Matt Schnell is he doesn't fight a lot anymore, and then there's been a little bit of a chin issue. He gets rocked a little bit, and Sumu Dargi can fucking crack you. Problem is, Matt Schnell is really well-rounded. He's kind of fixed that. You look at the Bontorin fight. I'm not even going to try to pronounce his first name because I already fucked it up twice. You look at the Bontorin fight. He's a big, powerful guy. Schnell hung in there, and chin showed out. His boxing looked pretty good. You know, he's in Texas now. I think he runs his own camp, which kind of throws me a little bit pause, but he's doing MMA a long time that I think it's going to be okay. But Sumu Dargi's losses come by submission. Matt Schnell has a great triangle. He's active off his back. He's got a great armbar, and you're giving me 2-1 for the former MTV star. Give me the dog here, baby. Matt Schnell wrapping up with a submission. I like it.
Big spot for Matt Schnell, Ken Flo, especially given the way his last fight went. He dealt with the loss of his mother and just kind of went in there with a reckless abandon that obviously did not behoove him. Your thoughts on Schnell here? Seemed like you were nodding at least during some of that Petrie analysis there.
Yeah, I think that is exactly where Sumu Dargi is most susceptible on the ground. I mean, you could even say he's just weak on the ground. I mean, he makes some big time mistakes. And if he gives up position against someone like Matt Schnell, I think that's where Schnell can really expose him. So that's the pick I wanted to go with as well.
I think it's
a smart one. Sumu Dargi is very dangerous on the feet. And sometimes Matt Schnell, you know, can sit there and watch his work and get caught. That's what I'm most concerned with. But I think there's enough value there to put money on Schnell.
There we go.
Yeah.
By the way, you started talking about jujitsu in Texas, and it got me thinking about our matchmaker, Mick Maynard. By the way, said to his two daughters, like, hey, you know, mix a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt, Henzo Gracie black belt. He said, hey, yes, you know, you guys become a blue belt, I'll buy you a car, you know.
Ooh,
one of his smart daughters is a blue belt. The other one's saving for an automobile. All right, and welterweight, Usman Salikov, minus 165. The Leech, Li Jingliang, plus 140. So the Leech has not fought since that submission loss to Khamzat Chimaev. That was more than 8 months ago. He is now training in South Florida, working with my guys at the Institute of Human Performance on the strength and conditioning side. On the other side, the King of Kung Fu, Salikov, has won five in a row, Bri, but we haven't seen this guy in a long time. Hasn't competed in more than a year. Francisco Trinaldo, his last victim last June, was to face Michel Pineda in January, but he was reportedly forced to pull out, which has been a recurring theme in his UFC career. Mm-hmm. Salikov unranked, Jingliang, number 14 in the world. Who wins, Bri?
I like Salikov's style. I think it's flashy. His kicks are really nice. His striking's good. His cardio has been in question at times. I feel like every time he steps up, this guy who's knocking everyone out is all of a sudden not knocking anyone out. But y'all must have forgot about the Leech. I mean, this dude is nails. And I know what happened with the Chimaev fight. Everyone's going to write him off. That's why we're getting plus 140 here. I have this lined a little bit closer because we haven't seen Salikov really take this next step up. And Leech can make it ugly. I mean, Leech went in there. He knocked out Santiago Ponzinibbio. And he can get in there and he can make it absolutely ugly. I like the Leech here at plus 140. I'm taking a dog shot. I'm actually pretty confident in this. I think, you know, after the first round, the flashy stuff's going to kind of go away and the Leech is just going to grind on him. He's big for the weight class as well. He went in Vegas. People raved about his training in Vegas. Now he's out in South Florida. He's making all the right moves here. So give me the Leech at the dog number.
Kempfel, what do you think about the welterweights? Li Jingliang, Muslim Salikov favored to take his number here.
Well, I'm definitely feeling a little bit more hesitant picking Muslim here now that I heard BP's analysis. I think it's a good analysis. I think Muslim is, I don't know. I think he's a little bit cleaner with some of this stuff. I think he could surprise Li Jingliang, but I do agree if it gets nasty, that's where, you know, Li Jingliang is going to thrive and probably win the fight. But I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to go with Muslim.
All right, let us get to the co-main event at strawweight. Amanda Lemos, minus 425. Michelle Waterson, plus 340. Brian, earlier in the show, we talked about Jack Hermanson, who is now fighting your good friend Chris Curtis, who is stepping in for Darren Till.
Yes.
And I know you were able to hammer Chris Curtis at plus money.
Yes.
He is now minus 156 on my site to take Jack Hermanson's ranking in the top six or so.
Yeah.
So go ahead. No, go ahead.
I said I had to go. I drove the Niana when they released the lines. It was minus 110 when I left the house. The only book that I had that was available for me in Indiana was Caesars Sportsbook. So I downloaded that app, got him at plus 140. Now on Caesars, he's minus 140. Literally completely flipped.
Yeah.
And I'm going to hammer him again. I just did a little play here to get it at the plus number because I figured it was probably going to be a pick. I mean, Jack Hermanson, I think, is ranked eighth. But okay, I think it's a really good matchup for Chris. I think Chris is going to butcher him. I do.
A lot of people like that matchup for Chris. Yeah. Seems like most of the bets and the percentage of handle on Chris Curtis. And that brings us to this co-main event because I can sit here and say Amanda Lemos minus 425, Michelle Waterson, given all of her experience and the fact that she's in the best shape of her life, shouldn't be plus 340. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, nobody's moving that number, right? And Michelle is not now all of a sudden plus 260, right? So this is where we are right now. It's number 10 versus number 11 in the world at 115 pounds. Talk to me, BP. I mean, Lemos was all the rage before she ran into Jessica Andrade in what was her first UFC main event. That was earlier this year. Your thoughts on Lemos? Prohibitively favored, I would say, here against the karate hottie Michelle Waterson.
Very wide line. I have a horrible track record betting and picking women's MMA. It's just my Achilles heel. Michelle Waterson, you know, the karate hottie, she came in the UFC, was a huge star. You know, she's fighting up a weight class. Let's be honest. I mean, if they had 105 back in the day, she'd be fighting at 105. I mean, the Adam weight is what she was at, what she's known for. But she came in with these flashy kicks and good striking, and then now she's like slowly turned into like a well-rounded mixed martial artist who likes to go for takedowns, but she's just a little undersized, so I don't know if it really works out for her. I think she's obviously improved and made improvements, but when she gets it there, she's not like lights out submissions. She's kind of confuses me sometimes the way she fights, and she's been off for a little bit, over a year. You get Lemos, she's coming off that dud against Jessica Andrade, which, again, I'm not saying that disrespectfully because Andrade is a beast, She went in there and got that standing arm triangle and didn't tap. I mean, she just, you know, got flatlined. But I still believe in Lemos here. I'm going to go Lemos over Watterson just because I don't know how Michelle Watterson's going to win this fight. I don't know if she can. She's going to outstrike her. She's not going to knock her out. I don't know if she can outgrapple her. She is in the best shape of her life. I saw the some photos got posted. I think UFC or someone on Twitter was posting photos. She's ripped, shredded for those fights, and I'm glad she's motivated to come back because there's been other things outside the MMA world that she's been able to do. Right. But I like Lemos here. I think she'd be a little more motivated. I think she might be a little embarrassed by how she performed in the first main event, so she'd come out guns blazing here. Give me Lemos, even though, Johnny, you're right, way too wide to touch. You're going to have to dive into the props for this one.
Yeah, Watterson, the karate hottie, is back. Hot. She's super hot, huh? Ken Flo, the karate hottie, Michelle Watterson. She has dropped three of four, but three of her last four have been UFC main events. She's had some injuries, extended layoff that dates to May of 2021. Ken Flo, Amanda Lemos, a huge betting favorite here in the co-main event on ABC.
Yeah, it's probably because, you know, she matches up so well against a lot of strikers. Now, Mr. Petrie said, I think that the karate hottie has turned into kind of the wrestling hottie, the double leg hottie, maybe perhaps.
Yeah.
she gets a lot of takedowns up against the cage, and she's good at, you know, landing that. Her timing has really, really improved. Is she a threat on the ground? Not really. That's not going to be enough for me to go the other way. You know, I don't think she's a threat enough submission wise to catch someone like Lemos. And I think she's in that in-between zone where she has one of the best sidekicks in MMA, but sometimes doesn't utilize it in the right way all the time, consistently throughout her fight. Whereas Lemos, when she gets her timing, watch the F out. She's an absolute assassin. She can time you going backwards. She can attack and move forward and land some great combinations. She attacks the body extremely well. Her hands are lightning fast when they're on point. So give me Lemos with the heel accent.
And given the way her main event went with Andrade, you know, someone suggested to me earlier today, it's a bad time to be fighting a bad bitch.
She's going to be pissed.
all right, main event. This is a true featherweight title eliminator between Brian Ortega, minus 155, and Yair Rodriguez, who is plus 135. One man will be eliminated here. A lot of fans feel like a win for Yair might just earn him that elusive first UFC title shot. But he has fought just once since 2019. That was a competitive loss, of course, to Max Holloway in a main event in Vegas, November 2021. Kempflo, we're going to lead with you here. What a fight to headline the UFC's third live event on ABC. You going Ortega or Rodriguez, and how do they get it done?
Tremendous matchmaking here. This is a fight between two guys with similar backgrounds who do not quit, who have specialties in different areas that very few people do have, you know, and I guess let's go into it. Ortega with the submissions and Yair's speed. Every time Yair strikes, every fight, I'm always surprised by how fast he is. Like, I'm like, oh yeah, he's lightning fast. I kind of forgot about that. And then the next fight, oh yeah, he's lightning fast. I kind of forgot about that. He is so damn fast and nasty. Like every strike he throws, he's either trying to break your leg, break your chin, send your head off your shoulders. Like, he's a nasty, nasty prick. And in that fight against Holloway, he showed that he's tough as well. He's game as hell, right? And we've seen that in different instances. And of course, with Ortega and his fights, we've seen that this dude is ready to die in the octagon. He's another one of these guys, tough as hell. And again, if he gets you in the right position, he's going to put you to sleep or break something. He is very dangerous with his submission game. And I think this is where he needs to win that fight. Is he good on the feet? Yes, he is. I just think Yair made such improvements in that fight against Holloway, and I imagine has made a lot of improvements since. He's one of those guys that I see consistently getting better, more dangerous, making better decisions all the time, where he was a little bit more of a raw dude. Who I thought had a lot of potential, and he has really fulfilled, I think, much of his potential. Still has more to go, but I think his wrestling has made enough improvements where he can thwart those takedowns attempt from Ortega and really punish Ortega on the feet. I don't know if he finishes it, but he's certainly dangerous enough to do it. And Ortega's dangerous enough on the ground to finish Yair as well. I just think Yair is streaking at the right time. He's taking smart fights. He's taking the time off in between fights to come back better, smarter. And let's go with Rodriguez.
That was outstanding. I might even, when I'm running, if I listen to this back, I don't usually listen to the show back, I might rewind it 30 seconds and listen to that again. Because, yes, I mean, you encapsulated Yair Rodriguez for me in a way that I've been trying to. Like, there's just something about when he fights that is is edge of your seat thriller. And I think his speed is a lot of that.
He's Brian got a willing Petrie. Dance partner. You know, that's going to no do doubt. The same. I mean, this is an amazing
City.
Fight.
Yeah. T-City's the man. I think Brian Petrie is going with Yair Rodriguez, but let us hear his main event selection. BP, go ahead.
Tell you what, tough act to follow, Kenny. Jeez, you fucking nailed it there, brother. Yeah, listen, this is they're both very similar with their trajectories. They both have Yair's reached a Frank Yeager mountaintop and lost. And then he's not as active. Then he reached the Max Holloway mountaintop and lost. But in the Frankie fight where he just looked kind of fish out of water on the ground, the Max fight where, if you guys remember, Max was taking him down. And he took a lot of damage. That was something my question on Yair was, how tough is this guy? Yeah, he can dish it out, but is he tough? And Max was taking him down, and Max was hitting him, and that was a really fun competitive fight. And Brian Ortega, he's had a different trajectory where he's gotten the title shot and he fell short. So both these guys have fallen short, and this is such good matchmaking at a perfect time for both of them. Ortega, you're right. He you know, with the home run derby coming up, this guy's got the long ball. That long ball is his guillotine, his any kind of triangle choke. Obviously, we saw in the Volkanovski fight where that was deep. You look at all this prior fights as well. He's losing these fights. He was losing the McConnell fight, choked him out. He was in a competitive fight with Clay Guida and then caught him, you know? So it's like, that's what this guy does. And you're giving me five rounds here. That's interesting to look at. But I think Yair is just on another level right now. You're giving me plus money on a guy who I think is in the prime of his life. I think his striking is crazy. His hands are, or his feet are just as fast as his hands, which is unbelievable. His power's there for a guy that's pretty lanky and he doesn't look like the most powerful guy. He finds your chin, it's over, even though Brian Ortega has one of the best chins at 45. This could be very competitive and interesting. And Brian Ortega has necessarily not fought the best game plans going out there. I mean, he looked great against Zombie. But the clear path to victory here, if I'm in Ortega's corners, let's get this fight to the ground, right? I mean, but he doesn't really do that. And so I question if his takedowns are that good because his jiu-jitsu is that good. But give me Yair here. I think Yair is going to win this fight. I think it's going to be a decision. I agree with Kenny. I don't see it as finished because both guys are nails, but give me Yair at the plus money.
Oh, I can't wait to see it. Cannot wait to see it. And we'll see if Yair Rodriguez can produce that next level win and maybe secure a championship opportunity. And I've had the chance to call Yair Rodriguez fight so sparingly that I'm just kind of holding out hope that we actually get to fight day. And one other interesting wrinkle before we let Brian go, I believe the fighters are going to weigh in at 8 a.m. Eastern time with a very quick turnaround on Saturday, right? So juxtaposed against Singapore, where the athletes get a full 24-hour day and two sleeps, this will be interesting. So we bump up the weigh in an hour, but it's still, for a lot of the athletes, going to be a minimal recovery window. All right, at Brian Petrie MMA for more from Bri, who will have more later in the week on the MMA Takes podcast. Yes. Appreciate you, brother. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Have a good week, and we will talk to you in less than 7 days, my man.
Awesome, boys. Have a good one. See ya.
There he is, Brian Petrie, with us for the main event challenge. I have to say that our Fight Pass exclusive segment where we look back at Kenny's win over Alvin Robinson at UFC 73. We appreciate the feedback very much. And I have to say, Ken Flo, your post-fight interview where you talk about finishing fights, right? It really would translate to modern day. Like, I know you people make fun of you for the high-pitched voice or whatever, and then we clip it out so it sounds even more feminine, right? I finish fights, but when you ingest it as its whole clip, it's like, you want to see fights finish, right? I'm going to clear out this whole lightweight bracket, and it's only going to be me and fucking Sean Sherk. Like, you actually cut a brilliant promo, even though your voice sounded like, you know, puberty was just a couple years before you.
It was a good promo for Mickey Mouse. No, listen, I think that it was coming. The other thing, it was coming off the backdrop of Sean Sherk competing against Hermes Franca that night too. So I was like, it went five rounds. It was another kind of, you know, I was trying to build it as a boring fight by Sean Sherk. And I was like, hey, I'm the guy out there finishing fights. I'm going to get back there and blah, blah, blah. So I was trying to take advantage of the Sean Sherk performance, I guess. But thank you, buddy.
All right, in a week or so, we will have our second UFC Fight Pass exclusive and details to come as to which fight we will be looking back at. If you want to give us feedback as to which fight you would like us to watch, certainly it might be one of Kenny Florian's, it might not be, but at Anik Florian Pod, it has to be a finish, though. So trying to avoid fights that end with a decision at Anik Florian Pod if you wanted to give us some feedback as to which fight we will screen next. All right, before we get on out of here, got to clean out the bone marrow. Get to the marrow seconds. What's up, kid?
Hey, you're paying for it. You may as well eat it right down to the bone. You know what I'm saying?
I'm telling you. I mean, I was at a very fancy restaurant in Vegas a few weeks ago, and they brought out the bone marrow. I didn't even know what to do with it, you know?
I love that stuff. You put it on the bread.
Stuff. There you go. Yeah, all right, Cody.
Kenny's like, oh, well, when I put my caviar away in my 1947 Cabernet is when I break out the bone marrow.
I'm just a caveman. All right. Sorry, Cody.
Guy moves from California. He's still got a wine cellar, so so I just wanted to start off with, I'm not sure if you guys saw this. So this was a Fight Pass fight where being a badass goes wrong. And I just wanted to play it for you guys to see why I said that. So hand behind the back, a little bit of McGregor action there. Round three, 30 seconds left, and you're done.
So if you're audio only, fighter had his hands behind his back, not unlike Masvidal pre-Askren fight. But yeah, showboating and...
just not great. Just not a great look, you know, if you're going to try and get on the Contender Series or something. Maybe leave that one out. So just thought you can find that on UFC Fight Pass if you use our promo code to get yourself a subscription there. But, I mean, if you listen to this podcast and you don't have a subscription already to watch our exclusive, like, what are you doing? Like, tell me, please.
What are you doing with your life? I mean, what are you doing with your life?
What are you doing, kid? Interesting autobiography story. So, John, I agreed with the point you made. It was like, well, if you had been writing, you know, X amount of pages a week, you know, you'd have an autobiography right now. Well, fun fact, I have a writing minor in college. I took an autobiography class and the professor, she said, you know, if you do 10 pages a week, you'll get to the 80 pages, like you'll get an A. You needed that many pages to get an A. Yeah, I didn't do that. I did the entire thing the night before. I wrote 80 pages in a single night, which was awesome, but also the worst thing I ever did, because if I can procrastinate and get 80 pages in a night, like what can I do on a night's notice?
I mean, any recreational drugs to push you through those 80 pages? How do you do 80 pages sober? I wrote a senior thesis. It was 45 pages. It took me months.
Yeah, well, let's just say that the sativa was flowing, and we kept the indica out of the conversation. But
again, for my senior thesis, by the way, Cody and Kenny, was called "How the Media Undermines American Democracy."
And no way!
Wow! And that was in 2001.
How pertinent is that right now?
Right. Wow. If only that was relatable to today's day.
Yeah, exactly. You know? It's like, damn, dude, John's way ahead of his time. I love it.
I guess. I mean, a terrible thesis.
That's pretty sick.
Go ahead, Cody.
Well, I'm just going to say the next time John's going to be in the New York Post, it's going to be an editorial that he writes, you know, front page expose, you know.
If like you need some quotes, John, let me know.
The dangers of airline travel, like what 180 hours of flight time in a year will do to your back body, or something like that. Speaking of around the world, so Jack Shore and his team, obviously training with Rongo, they're there in Long Island, getting a lot of hospitality. They tweeted today like, oh, New York City and this other place, like hell on earth. But then the motherfuckers take a picture in Times Square. I'm like, dude, that's like going to Typhoon Lagoon in Disney. Be like, goddamn, it's wet here. Like, what do you mean? You went to a water park. Like, you went to Times Square expecting it not to be shitty. Like, don't go to Times Square, everyone. Just like PSA.
Thanks.
Fazeev calls out Rafael Nadal in his post fight. I just thought that was a huge waste. Like, and then he doubled back on it when Bisping came around. So I just wanted to say, you know, like Ruby, you're in the corner, but like maybe be in your guy's ear for the call out, because a Gaethje
calling out Danny Rube, versus Cody Merrow, UFC 283.
Yeah, no, I'm not even going to make a joke. But a friendly
reminder.
You
didn't like the Nadal call out. It didn't even register on my radar.
I did. The Hasbulla one was actually funny, but the Nadal one, and then he doubled back on it where it was like, okay, bro, like that wasn't funny the first time. Like you just wasted the call out. If he would have gotten on there and been like, Tony Ferguson, you're a bum. Like that sells it for me. Boom. Main event. Fazeev Ferguson, make it happen. But Nadal, I mean, Rafael Nadal would probably beat Fazeev's ass. I mean, that dude's huge. He's like 6'2".
Listen to the New Hampshire coming out. Fazeev's going to be on your ass. Forget Danny Rube.
No, yeah, no.
But I like the Gaethje call. I just thought it would have been better on the mic. So that's fair, I thought fair. It was a little promotional mishap there.
Yeah, this is your segment, man. I mean, yeah.
And then just friendly reminder, everybody, the Long Island card's 11 a.m. start. It's on ABC, but 11 a.m. start, 2 p.m. main card. And then Steak and Lobsters on the podcast with Ray and John. On Ray and John.
And there is a chance, thank you, Cody, that we will have a live Anakin Florian podcast on Saturday night after the fights. We're trying to get the logistics together, but there is a chance that we're going to do a live recap on the YouTube channel right after UFC Fight Night, Ortega versus Rodriguez. Today's show has been brought to you in part by UFC Fight Pass, the world's premier combat sports streaming service with over 200 live events, the largest fight library in existence, original shows, and more. Sign up for 1 year and get half off for a limited time at ufcfight.pass.com/signup. You can, of course, watch Kenny Florian's entire fight library there. If you want his jiu-jitsu content, that is at kennyflorianmartialarts.com. AnakFlorianPodcast.com for all of your AF merchandise. If you want the One More Sleep stuff, that is exclusively at millions.co. We got all these people trying to knock us off. Millions.co is the only place to get the exclusive One More Sleep gear. And we do have a special Dallas design up for you right now in advance of UFC 277. Thank you to our guests. The venerable Mark Ratner, the slightly less venerable Ray Longo, and Big Gun Brian Petrie. Our producer is Cody Marrow. Thanks to every last one of you for listening, for watching, for subscribing. And we will talk to you maybe as soon as Saturday night. Enjoy the fights live on ABC. For Ken Flom, I'm John Anik. Thank you all. We'll talk to you soon. Until then, yo fucking later.
Hello, I am Dr. George Jesus Mesa, a clinical psychologist and collector of Chicano Latinx art. For generations, we have known of the healing powers of art at an individual and community level. Please join us as we interview prominent artists, collectors, curators, and influencers in the world of Chicano Latinx art. We will explore historical, regional, and political influences that impact Chicano Latinx art today. Along with our partners at www.latinoarte.com, we are preserving the colorful and rich history of Chicano Latinx art for future generations, one interview at a time. Please join us at Healing with Dr. George, the power of Chicano Latinx art, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family, and 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable.